As I was saying on side A of this record, Americans do seem to like to fight. That is, they like to go into a fight. Though usually the fight itself is not as much fun as they expected.
Water. Please, water. Oh, please, don't light over me. Both hands are gone.
Two of our men died today. They had shattered limbs, and worms had gotten into their wounds.
Barefoot in the snow?
No, not as much fun as they expected.
Thought I was going to a real quick glory fight. Either die in a blaze or come home all full of medals. Either way, a hero. So here I squat in 2 feet of water, day after day listening to the rain and scratching, dodging lizards as big as dogs on some fool island I ain't never heard of before.
A big attack yesterday, and we ran all night, and my God, what we carried. Nearly 500 in all. Arms gone, legs, eyes, ears, great scalp wounds, every wound possible.
The Guadalcanal jungle, malaria, dengue fever, yellow jaundice, and dysentery.
You should have seen the Marines who came back aboard the ship after Torawa. Wild-looking men with matted beards, uniforms torn, reeking with sweat and blood. Faces gray from shock and fatigue. Some of them were so quiet, just sat there staring. A thousand-yard stare, we called it.
I was a soldier in Korea in 51. Let me tell you, buddy, now that was no fun. Oh, brother, I sure wish you were there. There was flies and mosquitoes and cootie bugs in our hair. Then I came home in 53, and no one was there to welcome me. Oh, brother, that war had no fanfare. It was just a dirty job, and no one really seemed to care. No one really seemed to care. No one really seemed to care.
Water. Please, water. Oh, please.
My nerves are about gone.
The thousand-yard stare. The thousand-yard stare.
Poor boys.
We were fooled.
Had.
Sold a bitter joke.
A bunch of kids led the slaughter to a snappy slogan.
Join the Navy and see the world. Join the Navy and drown.
I signed up to kill the Kaiser. That's what we all said we were going to do. Kill the Kaiser. Instead, we ended up killing boys who looked a lot like us.
You lied to us, history.
Lied to you?
Lied.
Nonsense, you read me wrong. You didn't fill in the ugly spaces between the lines, only the romantic ones. I told you there were 500,000 boys killed in the Civil War, that more than half the Americans who died in the First World War died from disease, that 6 brutal months were spent fighting for Guadalcanal.
Made war sound so pretty, so brave.
Rugged, male, necessary.
Big white horses.
Shiny uniforms.
Dashing young aces saluting each other from their cockpits before beginning the deadly endgame there in the sky.
You lied, history. I sent him off. 1918. I was so thrilled and proud there at the train station, so happy. I guess I wanted a hero for my very own. Well, he finally died 6 years later. I visited him every Sunday, though it took me an hour and a half to get to the hospital on the bus. He never knew I came.
I am so sorry. But I don't think it was I who misled you. Perhaps music and art. You know, those posters and those songs.
Hey, wait a minute.
Don't blame us. We were just trying to be inspiring.
Listen. That's inspiring, all right. So cheerful and all. Brings to mind banjos and harmony with honey. Pretty flowers and green fields. Made us want to go right on out there with our brothers and defend the honor of our Southland home. But what's that got to do with me lying there that day? All alone.
The dead in this war. There they lie, strewing the fields and the woods and the valleys and the battlefields of the South. Virginia, the peninsula, Malvern
Walt
Hill,
Whitman, Oaks, that poet,
the banks of the Chickahominy,
he was there.
Terraces,
he saw what it was really like. Bridge,
the grisly ravines of Manassas, the bloody promenade of the wilderness, the varieties of strayed dead. Gettysburg, Vicksburg, Chattanooga, the trenches of Petersburg, the dead. The dead. The dead. Our dead. Or south, or north, ours all. Somewhere they crawled to die alone. In the bushes, low gullies, or on the sides of hills.
Yeah. Alone. That dang song didn't tell me I was going to die alone.
There's another one. We did it before, and we can do it again. Millions of voices are ringing, singing as they march along. Yeah. But what's a song like that got to do with a real sound? The sound of boots sucking mud.
Bugs. So thick around your head, afraid to breathe in. Can't sleep at night with them singing in your ears.
Yeah, boots and bugs or shells or machine guns.
Finally went to sleep to the lullaby of the mitrailleurs. Rat-a-tat-tat, very low.
What was it we did before that we were supposed to do again? Can't quite remember. Oh, yeah, I remember now. Die.
Yes. I'm sorry you were misled by all that sentimental nonsense.
But you didn't mislead us?
Oh, I may have been guilty of excess in describing the wars, battles, generals, that sort of thing. But I don't think you can accuse me of lying.
The Spanish-American War, for example?
Oh, that, yeah, well, yes, I...
Roosevelt's charge up San Juan Hill. He charged up Kettle Hill. And you sort of forgot to mention the two colored regiments that were there already. But then you always did sort of forget to mention the black soldiers once the battles were won and the job was done. They could just go back in the shadows again, as far as you were concerned.
But I don't do that anymore.
And what about the glorious Battle of Manila?
Oh, dear.
A farce. Nothing really involved except a treacherous deal between the Spanish general and the American general. No one even supposed to get hurt. But someone gets careless and some poor American slobs get killed and General Merritt gets carried ashore piggyback so he can sign the truce without getting his feet wet. And that's war. And you never said so.
Oh, war. Don't you ever get tired of talking about war? Why are wars so important anyway? After all, they only come along every once in a while.
In your 200 years as a nation, you spent almost a quarter of your time at war. And if you count those years of declared and undeclared war between the government and the Indians, it's a lot more than that. No, we can't pretend that war isn't important to America.
Even our national anthem is a battle hymn. Rockets, red glare, bombs bursting in air.
The war to end all wars. The war to make the world safe for democracy. You'd think we'd learn.
George Bernard Shaw said, we learn from history that men never learn anything from history.
Then why should we listen to you?
Well, Shaw may not be right, you know.
Oh, do you think he was?
No. Like every teacher, I hope someone's listening.
You're hopeful, then?
Oh, I'm always hopeful, dear lady. It's my nature. I am a function of the future. If there is to be no future, then don't take notes. No more photographs, no tapes, no diaries. 10,000 pens can stop scratching right now. 10,000 more typewriters can suddenly be still. Tomorrow. Which of you has no interest in tomorrow? Only then should you have no interest in yesterday.
But today is today. There's never been a time like it before. What has yesterday to say about it?
But everything is process, you know. Nothing stands in isolation. Today is from yesterday as you are from your father and mother. Tonight would not be as it will be if this morning had not been as it was. Everything is process. Why, even the littlest things. Listen to Dr. Edward Curtis, who helped perform the autopsy on the body of Abraham Lincoln.
Not finding it readily, we continued the search, when suddenly the bullet dropped out through my fingers and fell, breaking the solemn silence of the room with its clatter into an empty basin that was standing beneath. There it lay upon the white china, a little black mass no bigger than the end of my finger, dull, motionless, and harmless. Yet the cause of such mighty changes in the world's history as we may perhaps never realize.
That bullet is still ricocheting around America today. The other ones, too, of course. The ones from Dallas and Harlem and Memphis and Los Angeles. Whatever happens reverberates through the years. And if you would just pay a little more attention to me...
Why should we listen to you when you lie to us?
Oh, no, I do think you're making too much of that. If I were going to complain about my past behavior, it'd be that I had such a narrow point of view.
You mean that's worse than lying?
Well, it's more insidious anyway. Seeing everything from just one angle, it gives a pretty distorted idea of it. Of course, our point of view depends on where we stand and what we can see from there. But it also depends on what we choose to see. Remember the industrialist who was quoted on the program about the Progressive Era?
The most beautiful sight that we see is the child at labor. As early as he may get at labor, the more beautiful, the most useful does his life get to be.
While he was saying this, a 12-year-old boy was cutting hide from live cattle that had just been stunned in the stockyard. A 10-year-old boy's arm was being torn off in the jaws of a tin stamping machine. A 10-year-old girl was halfway through her 17-hour workday, a gray little ghost of a girl beaten by life before she'd barely begun to live it. No. What the industrialist considered the most beautiful sight, others would consider too heartbreaking to even look at. Oh, it's amazing what people simply do not see and do not hear. And in the past, I haven't done as well as I might to make them see and hear. At least I'm learning to speak in different voices now.
Ventriloquism? A trick?
Oh, no, no, no trick. I used to speak always in this voice, this wasp voice of mine. Well, it's serviceable. After all, a good many Americans are white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and I should speak in their voice, but not only in their voice, because most Americans are not white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
So I've also learned to speak like this, too. In the voice of the Darker brother, it, too, speaks for America.
Or in this voice here, this Irish brogue. Oh, it's a white voice, all right, but it's not Protestant. It's the voice of America, too, though they did once lump the Irish together with dogs. Did you know that?
I can speak like this.
Or like this.
Or this. The voice of the American Indian. The voice that was never heard. The voice of a people hunted, betrayed. And finally they were herded up like cattle gone astray and put on reservations. That's where they are today. But they still tell the stories of a time way back when they roamed this country wild and free, the first Americans.
Yes, I think it's very nice that they're being heard these days. I really do. All these people, I don't mind sharing our history with them. Poor things, they don't have any of their own.
Yes, it's interesting to get these sidelights on history.
No, no, you misunderstand. It is their story. These are not sidelights, for that supposes that someone else stands in the center. Oh, no. Each voice speaks the real American history as valid as the next. You know about the 20s.
You mean the 1920s? What a time. Crazy, of course. I'm not saying that I approve of everything that went on. Still, they sure did know how to enjoy themselves.
Who did?
Why, the Americans in the 20s.
Arthur Jepson didn't enjoy himself.
Who's Arthur Jepson?
An American in the 20s.
Never heard of him.
Of course you haven't. He was a sharecropper in Mississippi, caught in the flood of 1927. Lost his son first to the river, and then his wife died of exposure. Home gone, too, of course. No place to go back to when the waters finally receded. No seeds, no food, no hope. And while all this was going on, remember what Collier's magazine said?
What a glamorous time we're living in.
A glamorous time? For Arthur Jepson? For the Indian on the reservation, or the small farmer going broke, or the black woman in Harlem? Oh, no. Point of view determines how you see an era, or an issue for that matter. Point of view will say, for instance, whether your technology has been a blessing or a curse.
It's provided employment that has helped to build our economy.
A consumer economy.
With the highest standard of living in the world.
Every house with its share of worthless junk.
Every family freed from drudgery.
Junk that wears out just as soon as possible so that they have to go out and buy another one or two.
Time for recreation.
Time spent sitting at a baseball game or a football game or in front of the television set. A nation full of spectators.
Time for the family.
600,000 divorces every year.
Time for friends and enjoying life.
More than 20,000 suicides a year.
Miss Scratch, would you give up your automobile? Would you give up your standard of living? Would you prefer to live like an Australian Aborigine?
And perhaps there are still other points of view on your progress to be considered while we're about it. Not only those of men, for you're all linked together in this land of yours. Might there not be other voices in which I should speak? Voices that also tell of the past and warn of the future?
Coming across the frozen tundra toward this herd of caribou, a pack of huge white wolves travel like ghosts. Ghosts. In a sense, they are. Now, in the 1970s, they're only a reminder of wolves that once ranged the North American continent, along with the bison and the cougar and the wild sheep. The howl has faded now because of man, who believed he owned this land.
You're a minority species, outnumbered, dependent on soil and plants for your survival. And together, you've gained power beyond belief. And so you've forgotten that each of you is a fragile and slow, nearly defenseless animal with soft flesh and weak arms.
Now, that is just going too far. I've put up with a lot from you, but now you're calling us animals.
Oh, but my dear lady, of course you're animals. Mammals, in fact.
How dare you?
Just what did you think we were, lady?
Well, you'll never get me to agree that I'm just like some dog or a gorilla.
Oh, no, of course you're not like them. And one of the main reasons you're not like them is...
What?
Me, history.
Oh, now, really?
Well, what am I but accumulated knowledge, a record of the past? Look me up in the dictionary. Taking me at my broadest definition, it's safe to say that without me, very few of you could survive.
Of all the conceited...
Yeah, that does sound...
Now, consider carefully. If you didn't have the benefit of past knowledge, how would you survive? Would you know how to clothe yourself? Build a shelter? Heat that shelter? I mean, if no one had ever done it before, would you eat an artichoke?
Dogs and gorillas teach their children what to eat and how to find shelter. Besides, lots of that is probably instinct.
Oh, you're right, but your species seems particularly vulnerable. And without being able to tell each other what had happened before and how things had been done before, few of you could make it, let alone manage any of the trappings of your lives today. How many of you would have thought up the wheel, let alone the transistor radio? If each of you had to start from scratch, there would not be so very much to distinguish you from a dog or a gorilla, except that you'd probably do a lot of hiding.
Well, we don't have to start from scratch.
Quite right. Besides word of mouth, you have ways of telling others what you know.
And not always in words. Take cave paintings. Probably one of the earliest ways of recording data. How many hunters? How many animals were killed? How many hunters were killed? And the earliest languages were based on pictures. And think about the early maps. Now, of course, we have all sorts of pictures to relay information, all sorts of pictorial data.
Too much data. Warehouses of data on microfilm that no one will ever look at. Files that will molder. Books that will go unread. Did you know that the corridors of the Library of Congress are piled with cartons of books they haven't even had time to catalog yet? Oh, no. It's too much data. That's one of my big problems today. Books and files and photographs. Every house has a box of snapshots someone's going to have to just throw away someday. And home movies. Newsreels by the million mile.
But I should think you'd be so glad to have all this material.
But how to use it, dear lady? My task has changed, and so I have changed. I'm less of a storyteller these days, more of a file clerk. I used to know a little, but could spin a lot from it. Now I know too much and find it hard to make out any patterns. Just clatter and babble and get the feel and move on before I get buried in videotape. Consider those early explorers in your land, the Phoenicians, say, or that Chinese fellow, Ho Shin. I can only guess at what they were like, where they came from, what they looked like. Shadowy figures on shadowy voyages. But the astronauts today, why, when they go to the moon, we know the color of their breakfast food and don't much care.
Too bad they didn't have that Walt Whitman along.
It certainly is.
But they have those films. Pretty exciting seeing those guys loping across the surface of the moon that way. You complain about too much data, but photography...
Ah, yes, I'll admit that photography is one of my most brilliant young assistants. Has been from the beginning. Why, when he was still very young, he gave me those superb photographs of the Civil War. No, you soldiers who blame me for romanticizing war, you never looked closely at those photographs. Not just the dead at Shiloh and Gettysburg, the living, too. Those boys, brave and frightened little boys. Lincoln with his haunted eyes. And look at that photograph by Matthew Brady there on the Civil War album cover. The one of the ruins of Charleston. See if you can get any feeling of glamour of war from that.
War again.
Well, of course, not only grim scenes were recorded in those early days. I remember that day at Promontory in May of 1869.
A laurel tie. Golden spikes. Pose here in the harsh morning in that bleak basin. Hazy mountains ringing the horizon. Scrub and telegraph poles and a few shacks. Nothing else to see but the twin iron scratches of track and the locomotives and the cars and the cluster of men.
The man who took that photograph had come all the way out there to that bleak basin, carrying glass plates to expose. Didn't use film then, you know. But imagine all those bumpy hundreds of miles with a bunch of glass plates. Then Edison, early 1890s, fooling around with a series of negatives, viewed in rapid succession in something called a kinetoscope. Cinematography. And now it's a television camera on a ship to the moon.
Yeah, now we can see the real thing.
The real thing?
Sure, right while it happens. Or we can hear the real thing on tape. The difference shows up right here in this series. Take the program about the Declaration of Independence, and then the program about the 1960s.
Ah, so we pledged our lives and our fortunes, and many lost both. We were all soon dead anyway, of course, by the way of things. But what of our sacred honor?
Yes, that's Benjamin Franklin.
No, it isn't. It's an actor named Ray Reinhardt. Now listen to this.
No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours.
Now, that second one is really Robert Kennedy, right?
Wrong.
Hmm?
Neither of these is the real voice of anyone, and we must never believe that it is.
Oh, but that was really Robert Kennedy. Oh,
they are both electronic images of the real voice preserved on magnetic tape. just as we never see a dead body on television news. We must never believe that we do. We see a shadow, a magic lantern shadow of the real thing. Our lives have come to be filled with shadows, echoes. This record you're listening to now is another one, just an echo. Shadows and echoes can be of value, but you must never confuse them with a real thing.
I remember when you rarely heard music unless you made it yourself. Now it's blaring at you from little plastic boxes set all around your personal landscape.
Canned music, canned sports, canned politics. Have you ever really seen a candidate for office? You know, I worry that with more and more of you sitting in darkened rooms, watching shadows and listening to echoes, there will be fewer and fewer of you out there doing things. Until one day, you will sit in your darkened room and the picture tube will suddenly go blank and the audio will turn into a low hum. Because there'll be nothing out there anymore.
Or worse, we'll just sit and watch reruns.
And what will become of me? A photocopy of a diagrammatic analysis of a report on a bibliography of doctoral theses concerning the incidents of someone doing something. That's what I will become.
Oh, you don't really believe that.
No, but I thought it might be a good thing to end this program with a warning. And my time here is just about up. See? The needle is getting near the center.
So you don't think we'll all just become statistics?
Oh, no. As I say, I'm hopeful by nature. And when I look at you, funny creatures that you are, but each unique, distinct, I think you will not let yourselves become just traces on a computer system. And I think that I will always have tales to tell. Think of all those wonderful tales that were never told, and now never will be. I wonder what was in those letters George Washington wrote to Martha.
This has been the final program in the series, Our Nation's Heritage, produced and presented as a public service by Standard Oil Company of California.